morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I've got a great guest today. A person from the next generation, the next great generation. His name is Jason Kyler. He's a wonderful guy. He's works at the jail, and he has a nice title, too. I just can't tell you how much I think of this young man. He's Assistant Deputy Superintendent for Community Engagement. And boy, he's doing that. Because you see, I know I got crosswise with some people on the other side when I said, and I've been all over the world, so I think I have a right to say this. This jail, the Berkshire County, first of all, House of Correction.
That's right.
And jail. And they have, I made a comment to a former political official elected saying, it's not always wrong to put somebody in jail to detox. Because as long as they're thinking about getting their next fix, they're not thinking about getting better. And boy, that person went off like a shotgun. But it's true. Jason can tell you what they do in that jail. And I've known that jail since John Courtney.
That's going back quite a while.
Yeah, I came back from Vietnam and worked in the old jail part time. So, but they've always been treatment oriented, always. And they still are, to share Bowler, Jason, the whole team. So without further ado, Jason Kyler, Assistant Deputy Superintendent for Community Engagements. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Sturgeon. Thanks for that wonderful introduction.
Wait, I got to see, is my father here?
Call me Bill. I knew that you were going to say that. The second it came out of my mouth, I said, he's going to say, call me Bill.
Yeah.
Well, let me try that again. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing well. I appreciate that wonderful introduction, and you did really well on that extensive title of mine. It's Assistant Deputy Superintendent of Community Engagement. I've been having a lot of fun so far.
Well, I look at you, and in fairness and full disclosure, Jason and my son Patrick were at St. Joseph's High School together, played on the football team, but I didn't say that sarcastically or kiddingly, you are the generation. You're through all your crazy stuff, and now you're working in community engagement. Pat's working in New York finance, and so many of your colleagues, they have stable careers, and they work their way up through the careers. And that's a credit to you guys. And Gail.
First of all, I'd like to say it's a credit to your generation that raised us right. Right. And one of the things that, you know, we take a lot of pride in is, we were able to have mentors throughout our lives. We were able to take some of the good and some of the bad, and we were able to, establish a career for ourselves. Mine started way back. I first got involved in human services, or, you know, the social worker back at Hillcrest Educational Center. When I participated as a youth development counselor back then. I was going to school at UMass, and I would come home for the summers, and I would work at Hillcrest. Once I completed received my degree at UMass, I came home just to take care of my grandmother and grandfather, which was supposed to be for, you know, a couple of months. And I ended up enjoying the work that I was doing at Hillcrest and ended up staying. You know, eventually Hillcrest led into the Department of Social Services. I was actually meeting with a client over here. Actually, it was back on Second Street. I was meeting with a client at the jail, and I bumped into someone, and they said, what do you think about a career change? How would you like to come and work for the sheriff's office and help us develop a case management team? And, I was intrigued by that based on the fact that it gave me the opportunity to develop something new and do something that I love doing. So I'm blessed to have had that opportunity. And 25 years later, here I am.
Well, and I think people don't actually understand the purpose of corrections. Although the word, that is the purpose, the people come there to be their behavior corrected.
Absolutely.
And I'm also a big believer in a second chance and a third chance and a fourth chance. I was ran the Violent Youthful Offender program, and when you read their files, which you have done, and hopefully the listeners and viewers will absorb some of this. They weren't born to be gangsters. They weren't born to be troublemakers. But when you read some of their files, as you know, it's some of them were doomed.
Yeah, a lot of them were just victim of circumstance.
Exactly.
They came through, they didn't have that mentor, they didn't have that support, just to show them right from wrong. And I believe, I truly believe in my heart that if they had a little bit of more support, most of the people that we work with, if they had a little bit more support growing up, they'd probably be sitting in the seat that I'm sitting in right now, or maybe the seat that your son's sitting in right now. And you hit on something when you said House of Correction. It's not up to the jail to dish out punishment, right? The court gives them a sentence. They come to the House of Correction, and it's up to us to help them rehabilitate and re-enter into society. And we do that here through programming and treatment, and obviously custodial care. Security plays a major role in that, and keep making sure that the clients are safe and the staff are safe. And the other part is the mental health, substance abuse, education, and medical services that come into play when the clients are here. And I think the most important thing is we want people to leave from here better than they did when they came in.
And many times it's just not, we're human beings, we're very complex. So they may have a drug problem. But we need to look what caused that, what other problems may they have, and the other piece too is that I found in instilling them the work ethic. What's the old saying the nuns used to say? An idle mind is the devil's workshop.
And I'll say that, when people come through the door, a lot of them are at their lowest of low. And what we try to do is we build them up through the process that we have developed. They come in, and clients are they receive assessment, different assessment tools, just to see where their deficiencies are, what they need, and how we can help them obtain those goals. When people come here, a lot of people say, Jay, when you go to work, what's the jail like? And I say it's one of the safest places, because of the security staff that we have. And the clients that we serve are not under the influence of drugs or alcohol. They're receiving the appropriate mental health treatment, and they're engaging in services. And also, one of the things that a lot of our clients do when we talk about structure, they're going down to the gym, they're working out, they're starting to feel good about themselves, they're receiving all the appropriate medication. And, the end result is they're a much better person. Hopefully, they're a much better person leaving this facility than they were when they came in. And I think one of the great things that we do here in Berkshire County is we have a program. It's called Second Street, Second Chances, which was developed a couple of years ago through ARPA funds and with the help of some donors. And what we're able to do is we're able to help people transition from all the wonderful work that they're doing here behind the wall to the community with the support system in place. And that's how we built some success. And we've also had a lot of community employers and other agencies that partake in that as well. We go back to the old saying, it takes the village. And I truly think that we have that here in Berkshire County.
And you're Berkshire County, and like I said, I've lived pretty much all over the world. And Berkshire County is a unique place. If somebody's kid is sick, there's a fundraiser somewhere to offset the cost of them saying that the kid's bussing children you down there. Somebody's house burns down. Is this? I mean, you don't see that everywhere.
You don't.
And
And one of the and just to add just to that, one of the things that I find is that when we go to other institutions throughout the state of Massachusetts, we're just talking about Massachusetts,
Yeah.
we find that we really work collaboratively out here out in Berkshire County. And by collaboration, I mean, it's very easy for me to pick up the phone and say, hey, listen, John Doe is getting released from the House of Correction. He needs immediate mental health, substance abuse, or he needs some educational training. So we can call Mass Hire, we can call the Breen Center. It's pretty easy for us to connect the dots. And that's just through the network that we've built here, and just the ability to work really well together. We find that in other parts of the state that doesn't happen. Like
No.
people don't pick up the phone, people can't call and say, hey, listen, I need this. So that's why we're blessed here in Berkshire County. And one good thing that I could say the pandemic brought, just one good thing, it just forced us all to work collaboratively
Right.
together. I think that it encouraged people to come out of those silos that we have established that occurred.
Yeah.
We understood that we couldn't do it alone and that we needed the support of the full community.
Well, I think you're living a tradition that was started by, I believe, it was Sheriff McIntyre after the war. A lot of the people in the jail were dependent on alcohol, and he said, "I know if I turn this guy back out, it won't be a half an hour, and he'll be hammered." So he's the one that brought in AA or a version of AA. He brought in religious services, and we just lost Mary Mosley,
Big
her and
loss.
Bill Mosley. I mean, they brought a religious program to that jail, and they were as faithful as the sun coming up.
Yeah, they came in and they did a lot of religious services
Yeah.
here. And the clients or inmates really enjoyed spending time with them, and you could just see some of their faces light up
Yeah.
when Mrs. Mosley walked through that door. So she was a force to be reckoned with,
Yes.
and I know that the guys here really appreciated her, as did I and the sheriff
Yeah.
as well.
Well, I'm gonna bring you out something. I'll drop it at the front desk because every time I go in there, I'm afraid he won't let me out.
We'll always let you out.
It's the Memoirs of World War II, a little blurb published by Bill Moseley, and his daughter gave it to me the other day. So it's real. He was at the Battle of the Bulge. And when I was on this program at a different station, every December I would interview Bill about the Battle of the Bulge. And but going back to the Sheriff McIntyre, he believed, and excuse me, John Courtney carried it on. He expanded it. He brought in, mass rehab. We had programs upstairs. Mark Matthews used to teach, I think it was English.
Yeah, amazing.
GED, taught GED, prep. And that was in the old jail.
Yeah.
And the programs have expanded, and it got better as the different people. Carmen, I can remember being in Boston with Sheriff Massimiano when two of the other sheriffs kind of made fun or belittled him for his programming.
Yeah.
And he went off.
Yeah, I'm just gonna, obviously we're very proud of what we do here in Berkshire
Yeah.
County, and it's no
And you
discredit to
should
anyone
be.
else. I will say that we are obviously security, and the security of the
Oh,
jail
yeah.
comes first. But a close second is just the programming. Just making sure again that people leave here with the tools necessary in order to be successful in the community. The days of locking people up and throwing away the key are long gone.
Wow.
The reality is, the best thing for public safety, is for people to leave this facility with the tools necessary in order and the skills in order to be successful in the community. And also for the community to, accept people that are, re-entering back into
Yeah.
society, whether it be housing or employment. That type of thing. If you build up someone and you release them from a house of correction and they feel good about themselves and now they can go out and make an honest living, the likelihood of them reoffending is a lot less. That's a lot less likely
Absolutely.
for them to reoffend. And we find that, through Second Street alone, I helped start that program a couple of years ago. And, the first year we thought, oh, we're going to see about 150 clients. We actually blew that out of the water. We saw 435 clients unduplicated. People came out of the woodwork needing services that were formerly incarcerated. We had people that lived here that were from Florida, and they said, oh, I've been dying for reentry services. And one of the things that we find is that the quicker we can connect them to employment and housing, the better, the less likely they are to reoffend. First couple of years, our recidivism rate for Second Street was around 11% of the clients that we worked with returned. And I'm, happy to say that that number is around, Lindsay Maynard is not, or Lindsay Cornwell is now the executive director of Second Street. And, those numbers are around 7%. Yeah.
You can't, again, no one was born to embark on a life of crime or whatever in circumstances, as you said. And sometimes if sometimes they need to see that there's something other.
Yeah.
And we just did a thing, a concert at Balderdash with Michael Fabrizio to raise money to send kids to the Berkshire Theater Camp,
That's amazing.
where they come in and they get to experience everything about the theater, not just the stage, but backstage lighting. But it's in a camp atmosphere,
Yeah.
and it's pretty much tailored to kiddos that need to, that probably wouldn't see that.
Yeah. And I think you that hits the nail right on the head right there, right? So I can't say that this is mine. Someone, I think Yo-Yo Ma had said it at one point, the two Berkshires, right? So we live here in this wonderful community. We have tons of resources. You can do Mass Mocha in, North County. You can do Tanglewood through Lenox, and there's just all these different venues. Norman Rockwell Museum, down in South County. There's all this these wonderful venues that exist here in Berkshire County. But there's a lot of the people that reside here have no idea what it is, where they are. And one thing I'll say about myself. So I grew up on the west side of Pittsfield, which I love. And one of the things that I've, one of the things that I really am hopeful of is that we can provide access to some of the kids in the West Side and the Morningside to a lot of venues that are out there, just to, so that they can experience something new. And I'm not just isolating those two neighborhoods
Oh,
because,
no.
underserved communities are throughout Berkshire County. But I think that if we can show kids maybe that don't necessarily play sports, right? So we talk about the arts. There's a lot of kids out there that have talent,
That's
but just
right.
not may not know how to express it or where they can express it. So I think that's wonderful, that you're connecting the dots in that sense. And I think the more we do of that, the less likely people are to, enter the world that I currently serve in right now.
And I grew up on Wacona Street, with my cousin Dave McNeese lived at at Seymour and Madison at the corner there. So we floated from Wacona to the west side. But I think today, you're right, the isolation, the technology, we need to spend time with kiddos listening. Do you one of the if I I'll go to my grave always thanking the good Lord for giving me that youthful offender program experience, because Jason, it taught me how to listen.
Yeah, and I think that's the most important thing. I think that if we can, in any conversation that you engage in, whether it be with a youth or an adult, the first step is listening and trying to understand or relate to where they've come from or, what the issues may be. And I truly believe that a lot of people know what they need to do. They just need to talk it out and feel supported as they talk it out. And I always say in this field, I never tell people what to do. I only make suggestions. As to what they could do to improve their lives. And it's something that we all spend throughout life. We learn, right? So I'm not perfect right now, but I always try to get better and better as time goes on. And I think that we encourage our clients to do the same thing, whether it be youth or adults. I think that's how we become better as a community.
Yeah, and what the sheriff's office is doing, you have an outreach program. It's not just focused. There's a lot of focus on prevention. There's a lot of focus on the public knowing about you and the services. That's why I'm happy you're on. I try to have the sheriff on, every 4 to 6 weeks, but he's a busy dude. You're a
He
busy dude.
is.
Yeah, and it's an ed you know, when I got into this gig, I said I want it to be educational and informational, and we'll have a few laughs along the way. I just think there's so much in the local area that we do so well, and I think I can address the criminal justice field because I've been in it for over 50 years. So, thanks for not noticing
I
my gray hair.
wouldn't notice that. No way. You are young.
Oh yeah, you need glasses more than I do. But anyhow, but there's so many things that are relevant to our society that we do here, and we do them very well.
I agree with you. We truly do. And I think one of the most important things through shows like yours is educating the community what takes place behind the wall when it comes to incarceration, and what takes place in the community to assist people. And I think the more we all understand the process, whether it be employers and landlords and educational programs, mental health and substance abuse programs, the more likely we are to help people, be the people that they want to be the person that they want to be.
And I applaud you for say because this was kind of a running battle when we ran the Violent Youthful Offender Program. Was a turf war between we would bring kid youths, and these were adjudicated as adults. This was in a penitentiary setting. This wasn't juvie hall,
Sure.
and we would bring them to a stage where they'd be eligible for parole. But then we were told once they get parole, you can't talk to them. And we dudes, we're the ones that brought them all that way. You have 150 clients, or maybe more, on parole, and oh, can't do it. It's a turf thing. Well,
You know,
I look at it as a human thing.
yeah. And I think we need to get rid of that. I'm glad we got rid of that concept. The one thing I will say is parole is actually in the building. They have an office. I could pretty much throw a rock to their office from where I am. And one of the things that we do here at the House of Correction, is we encourage that talk between parole and probation and the House of Correction, because the reality is they're all of our clients. And the only way that we're going to help them survive is provide wraparound services for each individual. And through the wraparound services, the open communication, two things. We're able to, for the client's always like, oh, I got to tell my story all over again, versus the one time because we didn't communicate. And I think now that we communicate, they have to tell their story once, and then we can do the warm handoff to the other agency and provide the assistance to the other agency as well, and keeping people from being incarcerated.
And it's a team effort.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of the youthful offenders who got out had made relationships. We had a retired command sergeant major in the Army came to work for us, and he was like a father figure to several of them. And when they got out, they would call him, and he would immediately call me and say, "I just want to tell you, so we don't get in trouble. I just got a call from so and so," and he was just wondering if he was approached to do something, and he wanted to talk to somebody. And I said, "Don't worry about it. I'll fade the heat." Because I think so much of the staff too, it's you don't want them to be f their friends, but you want them to be familiar enough that they'll share with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And and that's one of the things that I pride myself on is being able to listen, and being able to relate in different ways, right? And I feel that if you do that, you can build a rapport with each client, and I think that's the part. Like the main part is being able to connect with them and establish, even if it's a little trust, but establishing some trust, so that you can help them, do what they want to do. And that's the most important thing, because it's not about what I want you to do, it's about what you want to do. And most of the people that I work with here, that are incarcerated, I believe in my heart they really want to make the right decision, that they really want to exit these this the jail, and they want to go home, and they want to be a decent father, they want to be a decent parent, they want to be a decent employer, and they want a roof over their head. And sometimes it's, most of the time, it can be difficult for them. It's not an easy task, but if we provide enough support system for them, we can lighten the load by a little bit at least.
Well, I applaud you for what you said earlier in the show. When somebody's going to get out and they're going to continue, or they should continue with substance abuse or whatever, you make the call to get them in. Because as we know, all of our social service agencies are stretched like rubber bands.
They are.
And I don't know what the I had this morning was Representative Barrett was on, and everybody's just waiting for that last shoe to drop from the federal government. How much are we going to lose
I know.
funding?
And it's so unfortunate because, through programs, if done the right way, programs can provide a wonderful resource to the community. And the last thing we want to do is take away some of those programs for people that are dying to
Needy.
improve their lives, right? They need them. And can there be some things done to streamline, to create a better process? Absolutely. But just completely taking them away, in my opinion, is not a good decision at all.
Well, and think about this, cutting back on Head Start, who needs it more?
Right.
I mean, we're talking an educational system now where kids, nobody's reading it, hardly anybody's reading at grade level.
Right.
You and I were fortunate. We had the nuns.
Yeah. Absolutely. We
Look at those earlobes.
Yeah. Oh, God.
But seriously, we have to get a grip, because if you have people that have no, their future is in doubt always. They're looking at a good job as dishwasher, custodian. Then, and there's nothing wrong with those positions,
No.
but if that's your entire future.
Yeah. Bill, one of the things that I encourage people to do is, think about what they want to do career-wise, right? So not just the job, because if you look at it just the job, people get bored, they feel like there's no movement there. But if you look at it as a career, it's something that you can be excited about. It's something that you can grow in. I was in a meeting one time, and they were talking about an assembly line at their place. Actually, it was a dish. It was a gentleman that was talking about, we had a culinary arts program here at the jail, and he was saying that, one of the things when you look at the culinary arts is everybody comes in as a dishwasher, but there's always that opportunity to go from a dishwasher to a line cook to a chef. And the wonderful thing about culinary arts is you can see down the road, you can see, hey, listen, if I work really hard in this position, in a couple of months or 6 months, I can be a line chef. If I work really hard at that position, someday maybe I can run my own restaurant. And I think if we look at everything else like that, you're building a career. And I think that's the most important thing. Because, for me coming in as case management, which we talked about earlier on Second Street, I knew that, I wanted to grow in whatever I wanted to do. And it doesn't necessarily happen overnight. You have to put the work and the effort in,
That's right.
and primary, a good example is when I came in, I was case management. Then you go to case management coordinator, then you go to, treatment manager, then you go to reentry services, and then executive director. And now, I'm the assistant deputy superintendent of community engagement. But two things: you have to work it, you have to put the work in, and you have to be able to see down that tunnel. You have to see that light at the end of the tunnel. So I'm grateful for have that opportunity. I'm really
I'm
blessed.
grateful you're there
Yeah, me
for a
too.
lot of reasons. You have a perfect personality for that job, in my
Thank
opinion.
you. That means a lot.
And to reinforce what he just said, I started working at the Friendly as a dishwasher. Worked my way up to griller. It's on the grill. So there you go. And I ate my way through it. I mean, I earned my way through it.
Yeah, I don't know if I could work at Friendly's. That they probably lose more money than they'd gain with me there.
The place I can't work is the Big Y Bakery.
Yes.
Weigh 500 pounds.
I know.
All right. We're going to take a break. I'm here today with Deputy Superintendent, Assistant Deputy Superintendent for Community Engagement, Jason Kyler, a longtime friend of my son. He's a wonderful guy. He's and the other piece, I think, too, just before we go to break, to caveat what you just said, you have to be willing to pay your dues.
Yes, absolutely.
Because nobody, if you come in and start at the top, there's basically only one direction you can go. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. I do thank you for listening. Please stay tuned. There's a lot more to learn about our local House of Correction and jail. There's a lot more. And there's the program now at the old jail that's just as it's worth it, in my opinion. It's worth the funding, because too often in the old days, the door would open, they'd go out, nowhere to go, no follow up, nothing, and a month later they're back. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM. You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
The Pittsfield Health Department is hosting monthly wellness clinics available to the community at the Christian Center, Senior Center, Epworth Arms, Capitol Square, and South Congregational Church. Vital sign checks, medication reviews, and health assessments are offered by the public health nurse. Our social worker will be there with information of available resources as well. For more information about these clinics, please contact us at 413-499-9411.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Hi, my name is Al Perlman, and I love jazz. Mostly jazz from the bebop and beyond period of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. I also love sharing my passion for jazz from my extensive jazz vinyl collection with listeners here in Berkshire County. So please join me on Sundays at 8 p.m. for my show Jazz Collector Live on WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we are back. I'm here this morning with Jason Kyler. He's the Assistant Deputy Superintendent for Community Engagement for the Berkshire County House of Correction and Jail. Now, I emphasize that Berkshire County House of Corrections and Jail.
Yes.
Because they have a dual mission. And Jason is very involved in the dual mission.
Yes.
There is a case manager, is a case person on, works with the outside now, works with people like us that want to know more and want to understand the reason for some of this. Now, Jason and I, he's going to grow old like me, and I don't have all the answers as to what happened to some of these people. Some of it is, if they commit a crime, it's always their fault. But what brought them to committing the crime?
Absolutely. So, you know, and I agree with you. I think that people aren't born and say, hey, I'm going to commit crimes for the rest of my life. Yeah. And I'm going to go to jail. You know, we talk about people being a victim of circumstance, maybe not having that strong mentor in their life, yeah, that opportunity. You know, I was blessed enough coming up that I was provided access to other things. And, you know, when I say blessed, because I think we all are one step away from making a bad decision.
Yeah.
And I think the important thing is that you have that support system to say, hey, that's a road you might not want to go down. And you know, I've been blessed in my circumstance to have that and provided with access. And, you know, once you're provided with the access, it's up to you to do, you know, what you need to do in order to have some success.
Yeah. And again, this generation of kiddos, they're really going to be challenged. I mean, social media, technology of every ilk that you can think of. I would say to the audience, I've said it before, probably should get royalties from this guy, but there's a book out, and it's called Anxious Generation. And if you're a grandparent or a parent, you need to read it, because, boy, I'll tell you, it's jam-packed with things and suggestions and recommendations. Take your child's cell phone away when they go to bed at night.
Yeah. You know, Bill, it's funny you say that. My wife just was talking to me about that a couple of days ago, that book.
Oh.
Because obviously we have three kids.
Yeah.
Our youngest is 9. So she's growing up in the thick of things, and we want to find out, you know, the best thing that we can possibly do for her so that she can have some success throughout her life. But you're right. There's a lot of anxiety out there right now on social media. You know, it's been very tough on this. You know, it's a good thing, but, you know, there's some things on it that aren't so good.
Exactly. Everything in, as me saying to the Irish mother used to say, everything in moderation.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and I can remember we had a television that was given to me by my uncle, my brother won our first television. And then we got another one from my uncle. And then my brother won our first color television. He's a golfer.
Yeah.
But we could not turn that television on till 5 minutes of 6.
And it's important, you know, like it's important in communities, especially with youth, but it's also important for the population that we serve here at the House of Correction.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, everything in moderation, not for everyone, you know, but I think that if we, you know, one of the things that we do here at the House of Correction is we provide that structure. You know, the structure is you go to a lot of the clients here can go to the gym for an hour a day.
Yeah.
You know, they're eating 3 square meals. They're receiving medical care. You know, they're attending mental health and substance abuse groups.
Yeah.
You know, they're receiving their mental health and substance abuse counseling, and they're going to educational services. And our clients do extremely well here. you know, while they're incarcerated. And what's important is we can help them develop those same, you know, habits or that structure that they need in the community when they're released from here. You know, I always tell guys, I say, listen, I'm not saying that you have to do something. You take the components that you develop here that are successful for you, and you apply those to your life when you're out in the community. If you find that attended substance abuse meetings were beneficial, then maybe you should do that outside. If you go to the gym every day, not that you can go to the gym every day out in the community because things get busy, you have family and you have to work. But if you can apply a little bit of that working out onto your life when you're outside of the walls, you'll build some success. But you know, it's all about time management. It's all about creating structure for yourself. You know, and that's some of the things that I try to implement in my own life. Not to say that I do well every day with it, but I really try to implement that in my own life.
Well, one of the things that we did in the Youthful Offender Program is those that were going to be eligible, we started to do almost exactly what you said. Here you do what we tell you when we tell you. When you get out, what are you going to do? Have a plan. We should call it pre-parole plan.
Yes.
And it was, they start thinking about it before they actually hit the door.
Yes.
And you say, okay, now, first things first, where are you going to live?
Yep.
Well, I'm going to go back and live. No, you don't want to think about it. Think about it. Where'd you get in trouble?
Yep.
With whom?
Yeah. We actually do a lot of that here, right?
What?
So, you know, one of the things that we do, you know, on the discharge side or when people become towards the end of their incarceration, usually starts 3 months out. You know, we talk about where they're going, you know, where they're going to stay, what they'd like to do for employment. You know, we can set up mental health and substance abuse appointments before them for the clients prior to their discharge.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about all those things. And one of the things that we take pride in is it's their plan, right? So we want to help them create their own plan of discharge. And that's one of the most important things that we do here. Because, you know, we do wonderful work here behind the wall. But that transition period, that gray area, is where we have to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed.
Yes.
In order to have some success. And the beauty of that is we invite probation and parole. I know that we had talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, probation and parole attend the meetings as well, and they see what programs are that we've helped the clients get set up for. And, you know, how we can work collaboratively together in order to help the client be successful. So, you know, we're doing a lot of that stuff. We're focusing on that. One of the most important parts of that process is health insurance. So every client that is discharged from here, from the house side, has active, you know, we help them activate their mass health insurance so that they're eligible for those services.
Yep. And you know, as saying to so many people with all these cuts, it's okay. And listen, I was with government. Trust me, I know where they can cut.
Yeah.
But
of course.
But what I wanted to say, and I always say, it's okay to reduction in forces, blah, 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 blah. But humanely.
Yep.
Humanely. If you're going to lay somebody, don't do it today because they came to work thinking they had a job. Now they're done at 3 o'clock. Their computer's shut off. They're escorted out the door.
Yeah.
Their personal belongings are boxed up. That to me is not what this country's about. Again, going back to clientele in the jails and House of Corrections.
Yeah.
Preparing them to go back into a society where they failed and maybe have hurt people. They have to be prepared to deal with that.
You're absolutely right. You know, and that's our mission. You know, our mission is to prepare people in order to be successful. You know, and I'm an old athlete, I say. You know, and one of the things that you did before the game, you know, whether it be basketball, football, tennis, you know, whatever you're doing, hockey, is you prepare, right? So it's the same thing that we do here. You know, in order for someone to have some success, you have to prepare them for that reentry process. And if you're prepared, fully prepared, then you're gonna, I truly believe that you're gonna have some success. You know, and you know, the recidivism rates speak to that.
And visualize yourself successful. That's the other thing. We had a psychologist come in and teach them to visualize. All right, you hit a bump, you fell, something. Yep. Get back up. Visualize yourself getting back up, facing whatever brought you down. And those are the kinds of positive things, viewers and listeners, that are happening in the Berkshire County House of Correction and jail.
Yes.
But, and Jason, I want to reinforce this too, if you don't mind. They have security at that jail that allows them to deliver the programs, because you can't deliver the programs without good security.
Yeah. And our security is top notch here. You know, I always tell people that there's not a moment in this House of Correction that I don't feel safe. You know, and I think most importantly, too, is that the inmates feel safe.
Yes.
You know, so if inmates, you can always tell how well the security is doing when there's less fights, you know, there's less stuff going on. And that just shows you that people feel safe in their setting. And one of the things that we're very prideful about here, you know, is the security operations and making sure that people are able to do things in order to have some success and feel safe and comfortable through that process. I can't talk enough about our security team.
Yeah,
they're the best.
It's 100% effort.
Yeah,
you know, it's 100% effort, and if I've seen it, you know, I've been around a long time, and I've seen it where there's friction between the two.
Yeah,
and I would tell you can't have that, dude.
No.
They got to work as a team. Security can come and say, you know what, Jason, I'd see inmate Jones today. He doesn't seem right.
Right.
Something's bugging him, you know, or he's not getting his phone call or whatever.
One of the things that we developed here, you know, was developed by Mark Massaro, who unfortunately is no longer with us.
Great guy.
You know, and a great friend of mine. You know, talk about 32 years in corrections, did really well, oversaw the mental health team. He was inspiration. He motivated. Actually, he was involved in this process where we talked about multidisciplinary the setting where you had the unit managers, the security personnel, the mental health, the substance abuse, the education services, the case management, all in one room. And what we did is we talked about each client individually, you know, every 60 days or so, just to see where they were at, what services they needed, you know, how they were doing security wise, what they were doing programmatically. And I think that gave us the opportunity to really work together, you know, behind as a team, behind one mission. And obviously the overall mission is, you know, rehabilitation and reentry. On the house side, you know, on the jail side, there's some people that are some pretty bad guys that may not, you know, see the light of day again. You know, and we recognize that, but we also provide services to them as well. But I think the most important part is that the left hand knows what the right hand does. Security personnel and case management talk on a daily basis, along with mental health and substance abuse. And again, you know, when we go to other programs or other jails throughout the state, you know, that's one thing that we always see, that, you know, people button heads a little bit. And, you know, from the sheriff has definitely been inspirational behind making sure that, you know, we know that we're all in this together and we're working collaboratively internally. And, you know, we might not always agree,
right.
You know, but we, you know, at the end of the day, we always come down with the plan. And that's when our clients benefit the most. So
I have a theory. When I started doing this about 19 years ago, we can disagree, but I won't tolerate disagreeability on the air.
Right. Absolutely.
Only because, you know, each one of us has a job, and especially in corrections, you have security, you have programming, you have cooks.
Yep.
Maintenance people, You have a, it's like a, it is like a village of people working to help other villagers that have gone astray.
Yeah. And one of the things that happens here a lot, Bill, is that, you know, if we have an inmate that's misbehaving, I'm sorry, I go back and forth between inmate and client, depending on who I'm talking to. But if we have an inmate that's misbehaving, you know, one of the things that our security will do, especially if that inmate is a mental health client, is go to the mental health team and get their input. Like, you know, what can we do in order to help this person be successful, and decrease their behavior, their negative behavior. Yeah. So I think that's one of the strengths of this, of the jail that we, you know, that we have here in Berkshire County. It's just open lines of communication. Security is always open and open to hear, you know, what the other disciplinaries are willing to suggest. You know, and we're not always right. We don't always, the programmatic side doesn't always get it right. Sometimes a person is just misbehaving because they're misbehaving, you know, and we can deal with that as well. Yeah.
And again, from what I've learned with the violent youthful offenders, sometimes these behaviors are contrived to have them get involved in a situation, escape a situation. One example, if I may, we had a kid in you know, he said, I wasn't very smart. So, you know, if we're going to have a test or a quiz, pop quiz come up, he said, I would do something to get thrown out of class.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
you see it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had this other kid, and I use this with teachers. And teachers, I had this kid, he was in, he stabbed a guy. And so they charged him with attempted murder, and he got a, I don't know, 15 to life or whatever. But he said, you know, when I interviewed him, he said, you know, I'm a behavioral problem. And I said, not here.
Yeah. I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And he goes, well, no. He said, I had detention every day. I couldn't leave school until 4:30 every day. And I would say, why? Didn't you want to go home? Home? My mother is a crack dealer.
Yeah.
I've been beaten up by other crack dealers, crack addicts, and the cops have bounced me around a few times too. The safest place in my life at that time, was school.
Absolutely. And I think that's the important part. You know, like, you know, I think back to, growing up, I had a friend of mine that didn't have, you know, I was blessed to be in the setting, you know, and raised by the people that I was raised with. And the difference was, you know, when he would go to school in the morning for the lunch program, you know, that was what he would eat for breakfast.
Yeah.
And then he would have lunch, you know, at the school, and that's what he would eat for lunch. Yeah. And then he had to fend for himself for supper, and he just never knew if his parents were going to be home, or, you know, if he was going to come home and the situation wasn't going to be so well. You know, and I think that's the one thing that we have to realize is that, you know, school is an opportunity for a lot of our kids to feel safe. And I think that we need to, like, you know, that's what we need to invest in, right? So you invest in the education, you know, and after school activities. You know, we have the Boys Club, the Girls Club. I call it the Girls Club, you know, different venues like that where we can have structure for our youth and make sure that they're, you know, set up for the best possible scenario. But, you know, like it's all about, you know, investing in those programs, because those programs definitely save lives.
Yes. And today we have a sad moment. We got to take a moment here because I know you did. And I know I did. I know Pat did. They're tearing down the Catholic Youth Center.
Oh, yes.
And I have to tell you, my cousin Jimmy McNeese ran it for years.
Yes, he did.
And Vin Marinaro took over. But a lot of us grew up in the Catholic Youth Center, in the Boys Club.
Yeah.
And a few of us who had money in the Y. I was more a Boys Club CYC guy.
That's me.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank those people. They're gone now. Jimmy Mooney, Fred Fahey, Father Casham, Jimmy McNeese. Vinny's still with us. But it was a wonderful place the Catholic Youth Center to be a youthful kiddo and learn how to play basketball.
Yeah. Places like that saved my life. You know, I'm going to be honest. Like,
me too. You
know, it saved my life in the sense that, you know, it gave you something positive to engage in. You know, school was great. I was blessed enough to come up. I started out in public schools. I started out, it's called Conti now, but back then it was Westside Community School. And then I went to Berkshire County Christian School. And then I bounced over to, you know, Notre Dame and St. Joe. But one of the things that I can say about all those places is just the community brought, you know, the community, the wraparound community, you know, provided opportunity for us to be successful. And then you talk about the Boys Club and the Catholic Youth Center. Man, it was nice to go there every day after school and be able to play basketball or be able to hang out. And if you're doing something wrong, you got called on your behavior.
Yeah.
And you know, I can remember, you know, I can remember Mr. McGovern would always, if you wore your hat in the Boys Club back then, and you came up the old stairs, Mr. McGovern saw you with your hat on, you would sit on the in the seat next to him for a little while and think about why you were wearing your hat in the building. And then the Catholic Youth Center, we had Mr. Gleason, you know, who was a nice guy, had the biggest heart in the world.
Yeah.
But believe me, if you were doing something wrong as a kid, you got called on your behavior and you switched it up pretty quick because you didn't want the message to get home to your parents because then you'd be in trouble again. And I think that's accurate. One of the things that we need to go back to as a community is, you know, holding people accountable, holding our youth accountable, you know, not in a bad way, but just calling people for their behaviors and
sometimes you have to point the behavior out, like McGovern.
Yeah.
Some kids thought it was okay. They wore a hat in the house.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. We knew that we didn't wear it at the Boys Club. I tell you that.
Yes,
and we knew that when I went over to the Catholic Youth Center, Mr. Gleason was going to be right there at the door, and we better, you know, we better do the right thing.
He was a good guy.
Because if we didn't, oh boy, we would get in a lot of trouble.
Jason, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on. I will be reaching out to you in the future to come back on and just kind of update us on the programming and all that you're doing. I personally thank you and all the staff there and Sharon Bowler for the institution they run. I've seen very good, I've seen mediocre, and I've seen very bad.
Yeah.
And I would put this as above very good. This would be, in my opinion, excellent. And it's the staff and the sheriff and all the people. You deserve a goal. Remember the gold stars with the nuts?
Yes, yes. Right on your,
I never got one. Anyhow, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I just like to say that Sheriff Bowler has been, you know, very inspirational here. You know, he leads by example.
Yeah.
You know, and he holds a very high standard, you know, that we all fall in line and we all try to do the best that we can by the people that we serve. And the people that we serve in this situation is the inmates. In the community, and you know, we're blessed and grateful to have a leader like that, and you know, we're grateful for the opportunity to give back to Berkshire County, because you know, we're not going anywhere. I'm going to be here probably for the rest of my life, and I want to make it the best possible place to reside.
You're a good man. I'll tell Pat you did an excellent job.
Okay, please do.
Yeah. And to, as I say every morning, and I know I just got a nice text, not really, over the weekend, but this is what I believe. God bless. And today, let's work to lift somebody else's burden. Give their life a lift. Make them laugh. Have them smile. Because, you know, we're all in this together, and we need each other. That's
amen.
All. Amen. Jason, thanks, bro. And listen, tell the sheriff I'll be reaching out to him.
You got it. I will. I'm going to see him in a little bit. I'll relay that message.
All right. And thank you, everyone. And we'll be in touch. See you, everybody. God bless. Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye. Keep on.